The Scarab Swarmcast is recorded, mixed, and produced at Lord Wellington's Beef Trapeze in Columbia, South Carolina, mostly. Scarab is the South Carolina area role players and board gamers convention held annually in Columbia, South Carolina on MLK weekend for 4 days. The Scarab Swarmcast podcast is hosted by and features many of the Scarab staff and guests. Views and opinions expressed on this show usually come from a random D20 chart or an FAQ found on the web somewhere, and usually don't reflect anything any sane person would or should think. I'm Toast, your kobold announcer. And now, here's our host, John Middles!
Hey everybody, this is John. Happy holidays coming up. On this episode of the Scarab Swarmcast, we're going to be talking with Quentin and Dan from Elderwood Academy. They make such fine wood gaming products as a little hex chest to keep your dice warm and cozy, and some really nifty dice rollers that they just got through Kickstarter, and you get to hear all about that. We're going to have some game reviews, some reviews of some board games that we played out, and you can check out at the Scarab Game Library in January. You're listening to the Scarab Swarmcast, and it's me, John, once again. Yay! Cheer and rejoice. But hey, I've got a couple folks here with me today. Some folks who you've probably never heard on the Scarab Swarmcast. I think that's a safe bet. I got the two guys from Elderwood Academy with me, Dan and Quentin. So for those of you who say that I never introduce anybody, ta-da. So, hey guys, how's it going?
Yeah, we're doing well. That was perfect, man. I'm so glad we did like 4 takes. That was awesome.
So it's nice to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah. Although I want to say it was Alicia Pekowski who actually said, these guys are going to be on the podcast. Contact them now.
Awesome. Good.
So Elderwood Academy, what the heck is that? He said, pretending to not know.
For the past couple of years, we've started making and providing high quality gaming gear for people. And we've been like, I don't know, Dan and I like to make stuff that we like to play with. And after showing stuff off on Reddit once, we like, people wanted it. And so we started making stuff and it's been kind of a fun, crazy ride. We have a hex chest dice product or a dice storage product, which is carry your RPG dice in. And it's a laser engraved wood box. And it's like pocket sized. And we have a spellbook gaming box, which is a leather bound wooden box. It's supposed to look like an arcane tome. And it's got some fun foil pressing on it. And you can use that for lots of different gaming gear, whether you're a card player or an RPG player. And we actually just launched our new product called Scrolling Codex. And that is a dice tower and rolling tray combo. And it's kind of a fun little, you get to assemble it yourself each time you pull it out. And so it has kind of a transformer feel to it. And same gig with all the other stuff. We've got some high quality woods and real leather. And it's a very fun product to play with.
All right. You had to mention transformers, which is one of my big things. So I'm sold on that. So So I'm pretending that I don't know any of the stuff that you make. The scroll and scroll case dice roller, those were actually just on a Kickstarter that, as of this recording, finished or completed successfully. Is that correct?
Yeah, about 20 hours ago. It closed up. And I want to add that the other thing is like a thing that Q and I try to do a lot is make everything very customizable and very personal. So stuff that we would like, but then within the realm of Quentin and I have different tastes, so we always try to make products that have enough character that you can kind of pick, like, oh, this is the version of this that I want.
Yeah, because I've noticed on a lot of your items on your website that it tends to be, all right, pick which type of wood you want, pick the type of leather that you want. You're right, there's so many other options. The the problem I had was I looked at your website and I wanted so many of those things. the spell book in particular, what I really liked about that was after you chose what type of spell book, what you wanted it to look like and what you wanted to be made out of, and then whatever design you might want on it, you had all those, like you mentioned, the different foam inserts, and to me it was a matter of, well, I'm gonna have to get multiple books if I'm going to do this.
Yeah, it's limit one per customer, and our goal is to intimidate people with how much variability there is so that they don't actually purchase, but we just want people to appreciate what we do. We don't actually want to be paid for it.
Yes, that's not true.
It's been a winning strategy.
If the Kickstart's any indication, that's clearly not true.
That was against our will. That was without our permission. we're looking into reparations. Yeah, no, thank you so much. Honestly, thank you. That was very kind of you to say.
In particular, there was one I looked at that I was like, wow, you know, I play a lot of Deadlands and some Savage World stuff. I was like, and here's one right here where I could put all my dice, a couple miniatures, and a deck of cards. This totally has me set up for that game, if nothing else.
Nice. It's like Dan said, like, he and I have very different tastes, and so we end up making stuff that we want to be able to customize to like each of our preferences. Uh-huh. But the other part of it is like we also, for both of us, like the immersion factor of things is very important. Like these spellbook tomes, you know, they're like ancient tomes that would like fit as props in a lot of the like the D&D games, and making things customizable to your character and stuff is like, that's part of the immersion for me at least, and I think for a lot of other people. So that's, I don't know, it's a fun thing that we're able to do for people to make them their spellbook, not just any spellbook.
That is very cool. Because you're right, it could be, I'm playing this wizard in D&D, and here are my spell cards, or you know, I need some extra miniature slots for all my familiars and things that I summon up.
Yep.
Yeah, and I noticed that, because we've been talking about a lot of stuff related to RPGs and such, but it's, you've definitely got some stuff set up there for people who might play different CCGs, like Magic the Gathering and such. Mm-hmm. You could totally use one of these spell books to be your, well, your spell book in Magic.
Yeah, that was Quentin's dream, but the Magic the Gathering crew would be.
I got totally crushed on this one.
Yeah.
I originally pitched Dan the idea of like, yeah, it's like a Magic the Gathering deck box, but it's like a spell book. And like, you know, and he was like, oh, that's amazing, but like, get rid of the deck box. and so the compromise was like, well, we'll do both. And yeah, lo and behold, like, I don't know, like a 5-to-1 ratio or something like that, people went for the non-deck box.
One of you is on, what, the West Coast? And one of you is kind of on the East Coast? What's up with that? How does that work when you're making these things?
So I'll give you a little bit of background. I've lived in Michigan my whole life, and Dan was here for, I'm not going to tell them how many years, but for med school. And
that's a kindness.
And he and I met through Dan's med school classmates, who was a childhood friend of mine. And so we started like gaming together and started doing projects together. Eventually this rolled into Elderwood Boxes, and which then rolled into Elderwood Academy. So obviously Dan eventually graduated med school and had to move to the West Coast for his residency program. And so I'm in Michigan, and we've like set up a shop together, and don't get this the wrong way. Like a lot of the like daily operational stuff, I like help our shop do. And a lot of the like, all of the other stuff, despite the time difference and stuff, we like both have a huge amount of involvement in. And it's an interesting challenge, but it's a lot of fun to, I don't know, we're friends as well as business partners, and we like kicking around and shooting together. And So it really makes her kind of a fun thing for me, at least, to, we constantly have like conversations with each other, which is nice as friends. But even if there's like a focus about business, it's just good to like get in touch with your buddies and see how they're doing and stuff like that. So it's a blessing and a curse that we're like, that we're so far apart. As much as it'd be awesome if we were like, you know, lived in the same, same city together, but we do our best and we make it work. It's fun.
Yeah. I've taken some leave from residency to go hang out in Michigan, and it seems likely that when I'm done with my training, I'll just head back to Michigan or wherever we end up setting up a more permanent shop and just make myself physically available. It is a lot easier to be around in person, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel, yeah. I sometimes feel bad for the balls we drop in translation, but
because you're like, no, I said deck box, not deck book.
Yeah. Well, I'm like,
screwed that one up.
We've mentioned this before, but like, or like elsewhere, but Quentin and I are, I guess, not surprised anymore, but we don't communicate well together with one another. Like, it takes multiple attempts to get even simple things across, and often there's like pictures and a lot of like, no, that's not what I'm saying, or like, no, that's wrong, or you're not understanding. Like, both of us, like, neither of us really gets what the other person is talking about a lot of the time. And I would like to say it's like a little bit easier in person. It's maybe a little bit easier in person, but we're in general like, that's not our strength. And so
that's totally true. You've like, have you had those moments where you like, you're talking with a buddy and he's like not understanding you, you think he's just being like a dick and being obstinate, and you're just like, come on, man, it's like, I've got it written down for you, like, can't you see this? Like, Dan and I have these moments all the time, and it has nothing to do with that. We just like, it's like, I don't understand.
Yeah. Kind of stare at each other in befuddlement. Yeah. Like, it goes up and it's like, no, I'm not talking about directions. I'm talking about an object that's a color. Like, okay.
Eventually we like denigrate down to like just making Minecraft villager noises, and then ends the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, that is usually how things end. It's pretty benign.
Wow. Thanks. So I understand that you have folks, because of your awesome, super successful Kickstarts, who want to help you publish your games. Is that correct? See, oh, man. For the listeners at home, the joke is neither of them are actually publishing games through Elderwood Academy.
Yeah, although, as we talked about, Quentin is an accomplished game designer in his own
really?
Right.
Oh, really? What's one game that you might have designed that we might have heard of, Quentin?
So it is possible that you played Happy Salmon, which is one of my co-creations with my friend Ken.
Happy Salmon. Okay, let me make a note of that. We'll have to get a review of that.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild... wild icebreaker game. It'll get your heart rate moving.
So this game, we saw it in action before we went to Origins. And these guys are standing around the table. They're yelling out all sorts of stuff. They're slapping each other's hands. They're doing some really interesting stuff with each other's hands. And they're just kind of moving around the table. And we were like, what the heck is going on over there? Which is how we got introduced to the game, and then we were excited when somehow we ended up with a copy of it from Origins. And I think we actually got another copy of it in the mail as well, which may be going into our prize library at Scarab this year.
Ooh, that's nice.
We're a fan of
that. I was at Toy Fair this year, which is, it's like a closed toy convention for kind of the like professionals, and like mostly it's there for publishers to get in touch with retail stores so they can like sell their games to the retail stores, and we show up as inventors to interact with the publishers. And we were there with North Star, who is publishing Happy Salmon, and that game is, it like causes such a ruckus that you know, this is like a bunch of people in like suits and stuff, and there's like huge like amount of noise and stuff. We were getting this like huge stink eye from all of the like booths around us that were just like, what the hell is going on over there? And could you please shut up?
Well, apparently your game's really popular in the libraries, which is weird. Libraries are very different now from from what I remember.
Is that true? People play like loud board games in libraries now?
Yeah, and video games and stuff. It's crazy. I don't know what the world's coming to anymore.
It's like a library. I feel like the brand of a library is like so straightforward. It's like, yeah, books. But I guess that doesn't make sense. Like in the modern era, why, like, what's the public good for seeking knowledge and entertainment, it's the internet. So like, yeah, it makes sense that a library would be a place with the internet as opposed to with books that anybody can get access to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that totally fits with like the conceptual, at least my conceptualization of like the utility of a library in civilization. But
I guess I'm just still like,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was wondering how long it's going to be before that actually completely fades away from like you were saying, like how we all associate libraries. How many generations is it going to be before, you know, folks stop just because we just associate it with, oh, it's a place where there's books and there's some lady in glasses who's constantly telling you to shut the hell up so that you can read some books.
This is a bummer. I just realized that means like sexy librarian Halloween costume is going to be like sexy internet nerd costume now.
How is that a bummer, Dan?
That's like a huge bummer. Like, I've never managed to wear that costume convincingly, and I feel like that limits my options now.
Yeah, but now people know what you are.
That's true. I dress up every day of the year.
It's not that I'm trying to turn this into the library discussion podcast, but it is kind of getting to the point now where I hear coworkers saying, oh, I rented these movies at the library. I rented these CDs at the library. I don't think it's been a while since I've heard someone say, oh, look at these books I checked out from the library.
Yeah, no, it's true. That makes sense. I mean, it like totally makes sense. I'm tied to my youth. Like that was like my favorite thing to do was to go just find like 100, you know, Mercedes Lackey books or something or whatever was around and just absorb them over the course of a couple of days.
Yeah, I was kind of there too. Although we tend to spend a lot of time playing Dungeons and Dragons in the libraries. So, hey, since we're talking about RPGs again, so now you see how this works. you guys are obviously into some sort of gaming. You didn't just go out there and go, you know what? I don't understand this gaming stuff, but those guys are going to need stuff to put their stuff in.
So, you know, pretty much those words, right?
Yeah, I remember that being a conversation, like having lunch. We're like, people need boxes, and then we like didn't know what they were for.
Yeah, it's the stuff. And then we just like did it.
Yeah, that's right. That was the idea.
Like, who needs boxes more than anybody?
Apparently, those people,
gamers, obviously.
The origin is like that we were messing around in a wood shop, and both came to the conclusion that this would be a fun product. And then Quentin's girlfriend at the time was like, we were just like making it for ourselves and goofing around. And then Quentin's girlfriend at the time was like, hey, you should put that on Reddit. And we were like, okay, will you do that, please? And then she did it and people enjoyed it. And we were like, oh, cool, neat. And so then it kind of spun out there. But yeah, the background is definitely like, I'm obsessed with RPG, like tabletop RPGs, like D&D is 100% my jam, or like tactical RPGs where I get to pretend to be the actual character. That's like the perfect escapism for me.
Okay. What about you, Quentin?
So I am less obsessed with RPGs and much more obsessed with board games and Magic the Gathering. And I've lamented many times that all of our products have focused on RPGs, and that's been like so irritating to me. And I tried so hard with the spell books to make sure that they would have some sort of Magic the Gathering component, and most people just wanted them for RPGs. So I've come to terms with that one on my own, at least.
They can use the boxes are set up, or the spell books are set up so that you could use it for your decks if you wanted to instead.
They are set up for that. And it's fun to be like in a position where we can help like enhance other people's immersion in their gameplay. And it's a lot of fun to like make other gamers happy. And that's something I know both Dan and I talk about a lot, is like the mission of our company. It sounds totally corny, but we want happy gamers. And it's like fun that we get to be in a position where we get to help do that. Yeah, I'm not too upset about it. I just like to joke about it.
It's been okay, I guess. It's all right.
If you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if that's what you're into, it's fine.
So
that's the 5-minute warning until we get the villager voices.
What's sort of the more popular of the products that you guys make?
So our Hex Chest is our best-selling product. it has kind of a simple and very like timeless value to it. And it's very straightforward. They're great gifts. You can personalize them. And I think we get a lot that come through the shop that are like very clearly it has like somebody ordered it and has somebody else's name on it. And it's like a very sweet gift for like birthdays. People buy them for their DMs, stuff like that. That said, the spell books are like pretty damn cool. most people who look at spell books, they have one of two reactions. The first reaction is, what is that? And the other reaction is like, holy crap, that's cool. I want one. They're like made out of like a one block of wood, and it's like natural leather. And we've got this like 100-year-old foil pressing technology that we use to like stamp art on. They're like not simple to make, and they're like, I don't know, they're pretty cool. I really enjoy them. And it's been fun to, after the Kickstarter, we got to make a couple thousand of them, and all of the different combinations of foil colors and leathers and woods and stuff. I got to like see a bunch of those get made, and some of them would just be like, oh, that's the one I want. and one of them, my mom was a sweetheart and came in and helped out with shipping for like a month. And there was one that she almost walked off with.
Wow. Is that the dairy? Is that the one?
It was a witch's diary, and it was like a bronze Celtic border on like a black cherry leather.
This was what, your third Kickstart?
That's a really good guess, man. That's nice. Yeah, that's right. yeah, this was our third one.
Yeah,
hopefully not our last one.
Cool. They've all been super successful, is what I assume.
Yeah. So based off of this one. The Hexjust Kickstarter, that was our first one, and we had like very little idea of what we were doing and how we were going to make all these things, and that was a very intense process for the two of us, and we like learned a bunch from it, and it funded like way beyond what we had expected, but we were able to like make it work. And then spellbooks, we had no idea that spellbooks were going to do as well as they did, and that was after we'd already had the experience with Hexjusts. And that was frankly like it was overwhelming to both of us, and so that forced us to like scale the company up in a way that we had to like hire and train people, and there were whole bunches of like different challenges that we had to take part in to get the spellbooks lifted off the ground. If you literally like just multiply out the hours, it's like if I was there making spellbooks to do 2,000 of them by myself, I would be making them for like 3 years or something like that. Wow. So we've taken everything we've learned from both these spellbooks, or from the spellbooks and Hexjust Kickstarter, and we're like wrapping it into the Scrolling Codex one. And I'm personally, Dan and I always have discussions about that. I'm always like procedure oriented, and I'm really excited to start delivering Scrolling Codexes to people. One, so they get them, but two, I'm like excited to like attack another Kickstarter fulfillment with like better knowledge and more experience, and we're just better equipped to be able to do this stuff now.
So have you guys have learned something from each of the Kickstarts that you've done?
I think we've had one lesson, maybe just one though.
It's about there. It's been very logarithmic in that sense. It's like one and then one squared and then one to the fourth. So
that wasn't the math, Dan.
No, it's communication, Quentin. It's I swear, it's definitely right. It's 100%.
All right. Well, I have no idea what you're saying anymore. So,
Yeah, it's been really interesting. I mean, like neither Q nor I had. There's like a thing they talk about in the world of entrepreneurship about, I don't know exactly what the term is, but it's something like brave ignorance or like bravery from ignorance. And I think neither of us really knew what we were getting into at any point along this process. And, you know, we like have our own assumptions and thoughts that sometimes are right and sometimes are wrong. And it's essentially every time we do anything, it's like these like, oh, kind of moments of, like, oh, that's how that might work. Or, oh, that's what we were wrong about. Or, oh, cool, we were right for the wrong reasons. Like, for Hextest, we did a bunch of stuff both right and wrong. And when we, like, look back at it, we're like, oh, we did the right thing for the wrong reasons. That's sweet. Like, go us. So it's, like, a lot of it's just, like, you know, trial and error and trying to pay attention to, you know, what do people say and what happened after, you know, oh, we definitely shouldn't have whatever, like... And to some degree, levels of customization is something that we didn't, I think we knew, but didn't quite anticipate how sweet it is to be able to like do it, how like how seductive it is to keep offering more and more customization. Uh-huh. But then I don't know if you mentioned it on the, I think you mentioned it at the beginning of the interview, but like sometimes that can be like, make it hard for everyone, like hard for us to deliver, but then hard for other people to get what they want. Like, oh, I don't know, there's like six things that I kind of like. And so we're always like going like, I don't know, that seems super obvious now, but when we started out, we were like, oh yeah, we should try to have like 100 options for everything. And very quickly, like, oh wait, no, it's a terrible idea.
Cause then you gotta really look at each individual order out of hundreds and hundreds of orders and get every combination just right.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just like, I mean, it's silly, but there's just, and if it doesn't make people happier, it's like not worth doing. That's usually the kind of bottom line, is like, oh yeah, should we do this? Should we do that? And at the end of the conversation, it's like, okay, well, will people care? Like, will people think this is cool, or will they be like, eh? And then if it's like, oh yeah, people won't give a damn, then whatever, then like we forget it, and it's like simplifies things a lot. But you know, this, at any given point, there's, you know, a few dozen decision points to be made, and then we have sort of variably good or bad guidance in making those decisions. That's like the right level of customization, is that everyone can have their own. And then I feel like the wrong level is that like literally no two in the world will ever be the same. Like there's like some happy medium between those two that we're aiming for.
If you had to pick your favorite RPG currently, what do you think it would be? I think I know the answer to this.
Magic the D&D-ing, I think, probably is like the average between us.
You just blew my mind with that. So,
one of those gets disqualified, I think. So, half of that, yeah.
So with D&D, what's your favorite class and race combo?
Race, that's tough. I mean, the arcane spells are just so much more fun for me. Like I try to play other characters, and you could play like a warrior and you could tank, and it's like, okay. And yeah, you could play like a cleric and you could heal, and that's cool. And it's like, okay, but it just like doesn't do it for me. Like I want to summon, like I want to do telekinesis and levitate and stuff. Like just the, or like minor illusion, like the possibilities of the arcane spells allows for so much. It broadens the amount of gameplay you could actually participate in ways that I feel like the other classes just don't have access to, that which is like kind of boo-hiss. Like I guess druids kind of, but a lot of the divine spells are, it's just so limited in what you can actually do. Like it's very combat focused, as opposed to if you want to do something like fly up to someone's window and tap on it, or like turn into a mouse and run around in a chimney. Like you can only do that with a small set of classes. And so far and away, it's arcane casters. And then I'm so frustrated that D&D is like hard capped caster damage, but didn't increase their survivability, because it makes them very dependent on mechanics that I don't find particularly interesting, like requiring a tank. And I wish that they would, like, I wish they would open that up. Like I thought correctly, they like moved scaling away so that arcane casters don't become just totally indomitably godlike at like level, you know, 15 or whatever it is. But they didn't like add the tools, in my mind, I mean, this is my opinion, obviously, but in my mind, they haven't like added the tools at low levels to make it, to make just combat rewarding as like a solo experience. Like you really need like some kind of block of meat in front of you to be able to enjoy it. So 100% arcane casters, and then with the caveat that like I wish D&D would have made them a little bit more durable. But yeah, that was like a very long answer for a simple question. We can do another take. I like arcane casters. They are fun.
Pick answer one or answer two.
any particular race that you like to play as a caster?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't deal with the, what's like the word that I'm looking for? Like, you know, lesser, or like, how do you refer to like a race that you have a bias against?
One to the fifth power.
Yeah, one to the fifth power. I'm generally a fan of like the tiny races, like gnomes and halflings. I just think are like cuter, and they like liberate me to play in a more lighthearted way, which like not all campaigns invite you to do that by default. And when you're like a gnome or a halfling, it's like, yeah, you're going to be like a friendly little goofball that's like built into your race, and then you kind of get to do it. So generally those, I don't know, it seems to me that some of the races are clearly superior to others, but I don't like playing, like I don't want to play like a half elf, it seems like meh, or Goliath and stuff like that. Like those are races that like I feel like have very strong mechanical legs, but not necessarily, in my hands, they don't have great like RP legs. Actually, I take that back. Dragonborn, I really like playing Dragonborn. I usually play them as like Russian mobsters, and so I enjoy that, like... That's like been my jam. But yeah, I don't know, another rambling response. I like Dragonborn and the smaller races. I think they're cute.
All right. So Quentin, do you mostly play Magic the Gathering, or is there some other CCG that you tend to like?
for CCGs, I mostly play Magic the Gathering. And I like, you know, I played when I was like a kid, when I was like, you know, third grade. Uh-huh. And at that point, I probably had very little idea of what I was doing, but like Magic cards are cool. And we like played them with our friends and stuff. And I have no recollection of what happened in middle school, but somehow I stopped playing in middle school. And it took like near the end of college, my brother pretty close, and he started playing Magic Gathering again in college and was like, hey dude, do you want to like start playing again? And I was like, all right. And we started playing a lot together, and it was like a ton of fun. So I like picked it back up, and now that I'm older, I'm not a good player by any measure, but I think I have a better grasp on how the game should be played than when I was 8.
Well, would you say probably is your most favorite
board game
now? Yeah.
I got a handful that I like that I really enjoy for different reasons. One of the ones that I love whimsical games that like include a lot of luck. I think they're just like fun and entertaining. And so Camel Cup is something that I brought to my family, and we've been really enjoying it. And you know, you're all betting on this camel race that's going on. And the math is so complicated that even if you're like a math head, it's like hard to figure out what you should be doing. And the swings are like super fast both directions. So we've had like a lot of fun with that. I also enjoy Splendor has been popular. I used to play a ton of Dominion, although the buddies that I used to play that with have moved to Chicago. So I don't, that doesn't happen much anymore. And we like went through a Seven Wonders phase in my family where we go on camping trips every year. And there was like a camping trip, I think we play, this doesn't sound super impressive, but if you actually like, we played probably 50 games of Seven Wonders that week.
Wow.
It's like, I don't know. My brother and I both like to play games at a snappy pace, and we've managed to train both of our parents to like be okay with that. So like a game of Seven Wonders takes about 20 minutes in my family, and that's like a lot of fun. And one of my all-time favorites that I have a hard time getting people who like playing this game together, but Puerto Rico, one of the old classics from Rio Grande. Uh-huh. I really like that game because the psychological component of you could make a great move, but because the next guy makes a bad move, your great move all of a sudden turned into a bad move. And so being able to have an understanding of like what other people are going to do and why builds into that chess game with that game. And so I don't know, I really enjoy playing that one. But like I said, that one doesn't get brought out too much.
This train has been going all over. I don't think it's been going on the same track the whole time. So
where we're going, great. We don't need rails.
You say that now. anyways, so I've been talking with Dan and Quentin from Elderwood Academy. They make fine gaming products for all your games, especially your CCG games. You're welcome for that.
Thank you.
But no, seriously, anybody listening to this should go and check out Elderwood Academy. Where can people go? Where's the best place and the second best place that they could go to find you guys out there in internet land?
So if you go to elderwoodacademy.com, you will be able to check out our stuff, see if any of it is things that will help, I don't know, bring pleasure to your gaming life. And if it does, we would love to make it for you.
And I will put in a plug for the second best place, which is like a far second, would be 1600 Pennsylvania Drive. Just hours of operation are pretty much all day. Just hang out there and we will know and we will send you things. So it's one or the other, website or physical location.
That's the second best place, Dan?
I said by a lot. Like, it's a pretty big margin, but it's probably the second best place, yeah.
Okay.
Third best is, like, in person, maybe? Thanks so much for having us on, dude. And then, as, like, a quick plug, if anybody does show up at the website and see something that they like, you can enter, like, at the very end of your order, you can enter in little order notes. And if you put in, help, I'm cursed, we will send you a Curse Breaker die with your order between now and the end of the year.
And what is a Cursed Breaker die?
Cursed Breaker dice are, they're like deep engraved wooden dice, and they're kind of fun. They're definitely novelty, and they're like larger than regular dice, and they just have some kind of cool designs on them, and they're nifty little products.
And they will break your curses, or your dice curses, I guess.
We guarantee that. We do not guarantee that, Quentin.
No, we guarantee that.
You will not be held accountable for any curses.
Guaranteed.
So if you get these dice and your dice are still rolling crappy, then it's not the dice, it's you. That's what you guys are saying.
Yeah, perfect.
And now the Scarab Swarmcast is proud to present Scarab Game Reviews. Reviews of games found in the Scarab Game Library.
Happy Salmon, the high five fin flipping card game by North Star Games. 3 to 6 players, ages 6 and up, and no real time frame, but you'll understand why. Happy Salmon is a simple, fast paced card game packed with high five and fin flipping fun. Everyone calls out the action shown on their top card. When two players have a match, they perform the action together, then discard their top card. Keep doing this until the first player to discard all their cards wins.
All right, so let's see. So we all, a bunch of us, played this game. We played two matches of it with a lot of people. But who's at the table to help review this thing right now? We've got Ruby.
Doug.
Calvin.
2016 Iron GM, Kristen.
Woo!
Yay.
And Tim.
Tim. And 2012 Iron GM, John. What's 2012?
I don't know. That sounds good. You're the old one. Who cares?
That's true. I was the first one.
Right,
so anyways.
Sounds good.
But unlike everything else, we're not here to talk about me. No. We're talking about Happy Salmon, which is a fun little game. It's a little card game.
It is.
So what's some good stuff about this game?
So super, super fast.
The first thing you'll notice when you're handed a deck of these cards, it's literally like, imagine holding a stack of 12 credit cards.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
So that right off the bat tells you what
credit limit.
Yes. $0 credit limit.
That'd be even better.
That's like my credit limit.
Okay. The rules seem to be very easy to pick up.
The rules are really simple. There's only 4 types of cards. It comes in a really cool neoprene salmon-shaped card case.
That's true. It is shaped like a salmon. Fins are...
Fins and all.
Everything. It's crazy.
But the cards are very sturdy. So they don't bend easy, which I think is the key, because it is very fast-paced.
Yeah, we cleared the chairs around from the table and then realized we probably needed to move the chairs
more.
Even.
Well, that's mostly because I saw this played at ShushCon.
Yes, Donald Dennis really likes it.
Yes, yeah, I know. He tried to get me to play it several times. But
He would be proud now.
Yeah. So that's why I suggested, having seen it, to move the chairs further away, because I saw the chaos that ensues.
It's a very active game. You're moving around constantly.
You're high-fiving, you're
fist-bumping. Constantly.
You're running around the table.
Yeah.
Well, as
fist-bumping can get a little dangerous.
Well, as Matt, the 2014 Scarab Iron GM, said
watching it.
This is a good way to wear out children, and he really wants one now.
A child or the game?
I think the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was kind of a weird statement.
I'll have to tell his significant other about that.
Well, he didn't. Okay. So what's some bad things about this?
It's a very high energy game.
Yeah, we had to move the chairs really far away from the table.
I guess it's not good for fat gamers.
Thank you.
What?
Actually, it would be very good for them. But I think what John said is the space that is required to play this.
We have a fairly large table.
See, I would use a larger table.
Well, they
make people run for.
Because at the library, they use.
Because then you can just go like, oh, I'm just going to switch with the
or
guy.
Or big high five table.
So there's 4 cards. Right. There's a high five where you have to high five the other person. There's a fist bump. Obvious. There's the happy salmon, which you have to lightly slap the other person's forearm three times.
Like a salmon would.
And then there's the switcheroo. So if you had a bigger table, you couldn't, for taller players like myself, you couldn't just high-five across the table.
Across the table.
Yeah. It would require more running around.
Yeah. Well, they used a 6-foot folding table at the library, and so it was kind of narrow across, but when they had to do the switcheroo, it took longer. Because of where they were at. But other bad, I don't see anything bad with this. People might hurt themselves getting too enthusiastic.
That's possible.
Whole lot of it is like no strategy involved. It just, happen to flip the correct card and you had a match.
You could probably have played 3 games in the time we've been talking about
it. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. It is also a loud game too.
Yeah.
So if
it gets progressively
that's
louder.
That's true.
So you should play it in a library.
Yeah,
you
play it in every library.
So probably not good for deaf gamers, because
trying to sign
all of these words really, 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 really fast.
When you're holding a deck of cards in your hand.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that would be an interesting one to see.
you could do like high five and fist bump.
Whereas we're making gestures like to the microphone.
And if you do this, and then you do that, and you do this gesture.
Or I could do this, which is really weird and complex. I can't believe I'm doing it right now. Okay.
Oh my gosh, John, how did you do that with only two hands?
Well, I know it's
he used the third one out of his...
Anyway, so we're talking about, again, Happy Salmon.
Fun game.
Is there anything else we want to say about this game? I think Ruby covered it when she said bag shaped like a fish.
Fun.
Fish bag.
I think they underestimate the trials and tribulations real salmon go through.
Yeah.
Slightly.
You don't think salmon are out there doing the switcheroo and the fist bump?
Pretty sure they're not.
Somebody can scream bear attack halfway through. And
bear attack!
And then tackle one of the rocks cards and run.
Right. So
I think that's an optional rule.
I scream bear attack and switch decks.
So yes. again, that was Happy Salmon. You can check that out from the Scarab Game Library when you come to Scarab. That's the sound of Mitch leaving the room. Everybody say bye, Mitch.
Bye, Mitch.
So, yeah, check it out from the Scarab Game Library. Again, Happy Salmon doesn't take a lot of time to play, but it will be very noisy. Will probably disrupt all of the other people in that room.
Perfect for Scarab.
And welcome back, Mitch.
So remember, always swim upstream. Boss Monster and its expansion, Tools of the Hero Kind by Brotherwise Games. For 2 to 4 players, ages 13 and up, playtime 30 minutes. Inspired by classic video games, Boss Monster challenges you to become the villain, build a dungeon, lure in adventurers, and destroy them. And it basically mimics the side-scrolling dungeons, video game style, all that fun stuff. We had a few people play the game here with me today, but we've played before in the past. Again, I'm John, and with me, who's played the game, is...
Dan Dillmater. Hey.
Dan the Pirate Guy, or whatever his name is.
Dan the Pirate Man, as I've been called.
There we go.
And 2016 Iron GM, Kristen.
Yay!
What's up?
Yay! All right, guys, so this was a really interesting game. What's some good stuff we can say about this game?
Well, we fumbled our way through learning it pretty easily.
That's true.
Once we got the edges rounded off, it moved pretty quickly. I liked it. The way it flowed, and it was easy enough to figure out.
We also had someone else who played the game who just came back to join us after a brief break.
Hello, all.
Who are you?
I am Bill.
There you go. That's all you get. You got to pay extra for the rest of that. All right, so we're talking about some good things about Boss Monster.
I like the art.
You like the art because it has that very 8-bit video game style, like old school.
And they threw in quite a bit of humor and references.
Yeah, because the art does also include many, many references to the old side-scrollers.
To other video games and side-scrollers.
Yep. Not just that, it sometimes references things outside of it.
That's true. But, like, there was that Pokemon reference you caught. That,
yeah, there's well, a like, you pet could monster. Say that's a... Yeah, it definitely looked like a...
Or Assassin's Creed.
The Vorpal Blade.
The Vorpal Blade, there you go.
Yeah.
Some tropes there
for classic adventuring as well.
Little C.S. Lewis reference there.
Oh, yeah.
It did not go snicker snack though. I'm really kind of disappointed. Anyways, so yes, quick, easy to play, quick, easy to pick up. Really, really fun art. It kind of tugs at all those nostalgia heartstrings.
Even the box looks like an old Nintendo.
That's true. Yeah, looks like an old NES cartridge. The expansion, the box for that looks like a Game Boy Advance cartridge box.
Yep, well done.
Okay. So what's some bad stuff about this game? What's some bad stuff we can say about this game?
You gotta have a decent sized table space, because we're doing this on a 6-foot folding table. And we were kind of running out of space. We were running out of space with four players.
So good thing I gave you guys all that space.
It helped when you died.
Yes.
No. So I'd say that's a bad. I'd say that's kind of a bad thing. Is
dying?
You could knock someone out of the game, and they might be out of the game for a good chunk of the game.
Yeah, it's okay. You were still jabbing at us the whole time after you were dead, and just haunting us a little bit. That was fun.
Well, yeah, that's what I do.
Some of the abilities, what time they came in, what kind of priority they had. It was a little fuzzy, so there were some things where knowing the timing of when you could do certain.
Okay.
Actions would be more helpful.
I wish I could remember what. There was a few cards that were a little bit vaguely worded.
Yeah, there were.
That could have been clarified a little better. Other than that, I really don't have anything to pick at this game about.
Okay.
The first time playing will take longer.
Obviously,
I think if we played it again, it would go much quicker because we wouldn't be...
Yeah, that was another thing.
We would definitely hit that... Might hit
once
closer
we get
to
past the learning
line.
Curve, it would go closer to the 30-minute time.
It, to me, it wasn't really clear exactly when the epic heroes were supposed to come out.
That's true. What time do they come out? What's the trigger right. that makes it happen?
So we just started having them come out.
Yeah, it's kind of whenever.
So what's something in the kind of other category that we can say about this game? Anything?
It's pure cards.
Pure cards.
Pure cards. There's no other components to it. It's a lot of cards.
It's a lot
there's
of
no dice rolling.
Yep,
there's
a lot of
else.
Little decks.
I do like that the box is not excessively large.
Yep, and they do a pretty good job of using the space they have with the box.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of waste space. You don't open up this huge box and find like a single D6 in it, and that's it. You find it actually takes up what it probably should take up. Well, that's cool. Is there anything else?
Nostalgic the whole time.
Is there anything else we want to say about Boss Monster? I feel like I should. There should be a B-52 song in there right there.
Does sound like you could put a cover.
It was not a boss. It's a boss monster. All right.
Yeah, that cover needs to happen.
Sure.
And drawing a blank.
Drawing a blank? Yeah. Okay, well.
It's a great game. I love it.
So if someone
this
wanted
game
to,
is another.
If somebody wanted to, it is another. There you go. So if somebody wanted to play this game, where would be the best place they could go to play it?
Scarab!
Yeah.
Or Scarab, yes.
I mean, I was going to say your mom's
house. Oh, you just went there.
My mom doesn't have this game.
But she probably has
well,
a nice time.
That sounds like
a
Christmas idea.
So yes, Boss Monster, check it out at Scarab Game Library. You have been warned.
This is the Bearwald family, and we are going to review the game Chicky Boom, The Rocking Rolling Roost. It is by Blue Orange. It is for ages 4 and up, and 2 to 4 players can play.
The chickens are resting quietly on their old perch, but when one decides to move, the whole thing begins to wobble. It's precarious and hilarious. Will you keep the roost rocking and rolling, or will you be the one to make it all go boom? Chicky boom!
So what are some good things about this game?
Well, it's really interesting, and it's definitely something like you have to like focus on. It's not one of those games kids should just bore out of. They actually have to pay attention, and it's like exciting. Especially when it all goes chicky boom.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just going to say what I did to annoy people.
No,
that
we're talking about the good.
This was the good
okay.
for
this
him.
Is the good
for him.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So my mom, she built it all the time. And guess what I always did?
What?
I found a weak spot and made it topple. And I always won because I was the youngest.
Okay.
What did you find fun, Daddy?
I found it entertaining to watch the two of you put a lot of work into balancing it just right, and it was there, and it was good, and no matter what you did, he found the one to move that would cause all of it to just fall over.
Yeah, so that's the good part for the game.
Oh,
yeah.
Sadly,
yes.
Really
okay.
enjoyable
all
to
right.
watch.
Well,
the bad
anyone
what's, else
what's
good?
Anybody else have anything? By that.
The name, it's Chicky Boom.
Mom, do your funny voice.
Chicky Boom!
So is that part of the game? Do you have to actually see that when it falls down or something?
No.
Okay.
She just liked it.
All right. So what's something that we can say that might be kind of bad? What's a bad
The youngest kid should not go first.
But that is a rule.
But that was what someone said was good.
Yes.
They should make the thing longer and the pieces heavier.
So they should make the base that they sit on a little bit longer?
Yeah,
so it's a bit
they
more
They should have kind of like that.
Or maybe the game topples in like two turns.
One turn.
Okay.
Well, if you're you.
So
it's too short.
So good. It's too short, and you're saying that everything about it should just be bigger, is what
yeah.
you're saying. You want to be able to ride on that thing like a.
Yeah.
Like
who wants buildings
seesaw?
To topple
yeah.
and quake?
All right.
I guess maybe like there should be more pieces so that way.
It would be more challenging?
Yeah, first because it would make it be more challenging, and also that way it doesn't immediately topple over, but so that way it actually takes effort to
well,
get toppled
Well, I am
going to
point out again, this is ages from 4 and up, so for very young children. It would be awesome
yes.
if they had pictures of different variations of where you can place the pieces.
Okay.
Yeah.
With not enough graphical pictures for a game that's for a younger
Just,
child.
Right, because okay. it's very difficult. I had to place my finger in the middle and then put the pieces on and then check. A child
okay.
who's 4 can't
do that.
Possibly
that well.
Set it up as well.
Okay.
Time
they
for
need
other.
Their parent.
Okay.
Time for other.
Okay.
And the other
Well, let's, since you mentioned that, what about in the other category? Sounds like you've got something to say about this.
It's for ages 4 and up, but it takes an 80-year-old to open it.
It takes an 80-year-old to open the box.
Yeah.
I could not open the box.
Take it from
her. New game box.
What about the pieces? I happen to pick it up. There's wooden pieces and little felt cock combs.
So they're all wood?
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
That's a neat little
unusual.
I like
the pieces. That's what drew me to it. Okay. Was
the Mom,
and the name.
Chicky-boom.
I think the pieces are like cool because they're interesting to little kids. I know that I'm interested now and I'm 12. So.
And then
it just all looks neat. The color just kind of pops it out.
They're going to get knocked around. They're going to fall, but they're not going to crack.
So good quality product, well thought out as far as the product.
Definitely.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
All pieces are wood?
Yep. Except for the felt heads.
What about that?
Yep.
So
yep,
all
that's
these
wood.
All right. So, thank you again. That was Cheeky Boom, Blue Orange Games. And where could someone play this game if they wanted to?
I would say it's in our Scarab Game Library.
Scarab?
And this was the Bear Walls that reviewed the game, played and reviewed the game.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thanks,
Cheeky
guys.
Boom.
It's a microphone, not a camera. So, hey, everybody. John here again, of course. I don't know why that's a surprise, really. It's usually me. But I'm here at Scorpion, the Scarab Gaming Camp Experience. We'll call it an experience. Why not? And I've got somebody a little different this time. Not Del Collins, not Matt Pekowski. You know, those guys, they always like to get on the show. I've got with me Phil Allison. Hope I didn't just butcher that. It's early, so I'm kind of... So I'm still early on Sunday morning. I'm still kind of... My throat's a little...
Aren't we all, after 3 days of gaming, that is the way it is. It's zombie morning.
So Phil, why do I have you on the show today?
Honestly, I'm not really quite sure. I think it might have something to do with gaming, but I don't know. They just said, go sit in this room and talk to this guy, and so I did.
Well, you're involved in something. Something having to do with a little game that some people might have heard of called Dungeons and Dragons. I promise I haven't been drinking this morning.
I'm not sure I've heard of that game before. Are you sure I'm involved with that?
That's
yeah, actually, I'm involved in the... I am the local coordinator for Adventurers League, which is a society-based group for Dungeons and Dragons.
Awesome. I had a little... I want to say it was last year I had a chance to actually play my first Adventurers League thing for Dungeons and Dragons here at Scorpion. It was a very short one, mm-hmm. And I was playing a pre-gen. I think I was playing a priest or cleric or something. It was one of those Sunday morning things, so it was kind of blurry still. But,
right.
But I've been playing Dungeons and Dragons since. First, second edition, third edition, 3.5. I kind of skipped fourth, but
nobody likes to talk about fourth.
Oh, we don't talk about fourth. We don't talk about Windows XP. We don't.
Exactly.
So, but fifth edition is pretty neat. It's got a lot of really neat stuff going on for it.
They changed a lot of the mechanics in fifth edition. They did a lot of good things to streamline the combat and the gameplay, and to add more to the story building aspect of the game itself. So while combat is still there, it's a lot more loose, it's a lot more casual, not as strict as it used to be, and it helps continue the flow of the game so that the story can continue on.
Yeah, that's what I found too, and I really liked that, because that's usually when I would run D&D, that's kind of the way I tended to try to go, was more towards the story elements. But you're right, yeah, 5th edition just kind of, it you're right, you just get in there and you just flows.
Absolutely. We've been able to, with Adventurers League, playing up at Firefly on Wednesday nights, we've been able to bring in brand new people, make them feel like, even if they've never played D&D before in their life, that they kind of know what's going on. They're able to jump right in with seasoned players and get familiar with the game and the dynamics that are going on themselves, and act out their part of the story and really feel like they're a part of it that's going on, even though it may be their very first game.
Okay. So you mentioned Firefly. I know we've got some folks who run some Pathfinder Society on Firefly at Firefly on Wednesday nights, but that's also when you do the Adventure League stuff on a regular basis?
That's correct. In fact, we kind of have a tug-of-war on who's going to get what tables on Wednesday nights.
Well, it's not just tables. They've lost a few PFS players to D&D as well.
No way. That's not possible.
I think one of the main reasons for that, though, is do the D&D games... about how long do those take to play?
So on Wednesday nights, we try to run 2 to 2.5 hour slots. The modules themselves are anywhere from 1 hour for the introductory modules for each season.
Mm-hmm.
They're like 5 small 1 hour sessions, up to 4 hours for some of the bigger modules. But even then, sometimes those go into multiple modules to run 8 hours. However, all that can be broken down. We have slots of like 2 hours on Wednesday nights that we try to stick to, so that people aren't staying up too late or staying out too late, especially if they've got kids or work the next morning.
Yeah, and I know that's how PFS has lost a few people, on the Wednesday nights at least.
Right.
Because of that. And when I heard about that, I was like, man, that does sound pretty good, but... By the time I get home, I just don't have much time to do anything on the weeknights. But that's just me.
Right.
That's just me.
Right, and it's very interesting. If you grew up like I did, mm-hmm. Gaming meant a 6 to 10 hour to 12 hour session all in a row.
Yeah,
there was none of this. 2 hours, oh, we'll just barely get started. But people have found the way that it's going right now with the way Adventure League puts their modules together, mm-hmm. that it is easy to jump in and jump back out and jump back in the next week and continue and finish or start a new one.
That is a pretty interesting format. I've seen a few other RPGs that are kind of going to that 1 to 2 hour format as well, but nothing quite like what I'm seeing with D&D.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. So, like with any other society games, you can have your character that you've made, and you can take that to any place that's running these Adventure League games and play.
Absolutely.
Your character.
And not only one of the freedoms that they give you in Adventures League is you can go to a convention, you can go to a store, you can go to a home game, play that same character.
Very nice.
And then take that character, as long as you keep up with your log sheet and you can prove that, yes, I really do have a +2 weapon through the log sheet, through the modules that you played, then you can play it anywhere. And the DMs have the freedom to look over the log sheet and say, okay, well, yes, you can absolutely play that character here, but you can't play this variation that DM allowed over at his table, because it was nice of him to allow you to do that, but that's not actual legal rules. I won't allow it, but maybe another DM will.
Oh, that's interesting. That's pretty neat. Is there an online way to track or report or such these things? Because I know everything I know about this is from my experience with Pathfinder Society, where the GMs have to take a sheet and they have to report. Here's the player numbers and such that were in there.
Right.
It doesn't actually keep track of any of the chronicles or what items or anything anyone has. It just...
Right. And no, they do some very basic reporting right now,
uh-huh.
with Adventurers League, but they don't actually... It's basically considered the honor system.
Okay.
When it comes right down to it.
Yeah, it's putting a lot of that back into the players and Dungeon Master's hands. We can say DM because it's D&D.
Right, exactly.
So, I got out of
saying DM and going to GM, so now I'm having to
say that. And we use that interchangeably, so that's
fine. Right. You can't use DM. That's our name. Okay.
Yeah, that seems a little... you would think if it's a dungeon and somebody is running the game, then they're the master
should
of the dungeon.
Yeah, it shouldn't matter where the dungeon is.
Exactly.
What system the dungeon is. And it's kind of a funny little thing, because there's not... A lot of games try to say, no, in this game, the guy running the game is the is considered the storyteller, or the... there's a game I like to play where it's... The guy running the game is called the mayor, but that never really sticks. It still kind of reverts to the GM.
Right.
Whereas with D&D, it's not hard to just keep calling the dungeon master the DM.
Exactly.
That's all the years of history with that game.
Right, exactly. Even though at cons, I mean, they could be called any number of things. They could be called the coordinator, the leader, you know.
You can almost tell what games people started off playing by what they call that guy who's behind that screen.
Right.
Because I've been in games where someone's like, listen to what the storyteller's saying. I'm like, you started off on some either Vampire or World of Darkness stuff.
Right. Yeah. And for me, it's always, I mean, I originally started with Dungeons & Dragons way back in the day.
Right.
So it's always been DM.
So was D&D kind of your first sort of introduction into role-playing games?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Advanced D&D back in the 70s was my original introduction into it. I got out of role-playing games for quite a while, did a lot of online games.
Okay.
Even enjoyed the role-playing games that were there, like the single player games, Arena, Daggerfall, Elder Scrolls series type games.
Yeah.
Got into some online MMO games, and then, quite a few years back, got back into role-playing games through Pathfinder.
Isn't that funny? That's what happened to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Is they just kind of went, they dropped off of the pen and paper RPG kind of thing, went into a lot of those video games. I know for my wife and I, for a while, it was a... World of Warcraft.
Oh yeah, who didn't play World of Warcraft, right?
Yeah, it was World of Warcraft. Maybe every now and then, oh sure, we'll play whatever this RPG is. But then it's like after a while, it was like, yeah, you know what I miss was playing Shadowrun or Deadlands or Pathfinder. At the time, I don't think we had when we finally got into Pathfinder, it was like, God, this is everything that I remember and forgot that I liked about Dungeons & Dragons.
Absolutely. And the one thing that you have, to me, that makes the pen and paper so much more than the video games is there's no rule limitations on what the player can do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can sit down at the table and the game master has all this stuff laid out for you to do, and all of a sudden you and your entire party track out through the desert and you're off the map already. And in a video game you can't do that. You run into the borders.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I can't fly up any higher than this because they didn't code anything higher than this.
Right, exactly.
The whole world has this weird square border around it. No, but yeah, when you mentioned that, it's like, yeah, because I've never run a game before where I've offhandedly described something that was really not intending for the players to go to it, and they just fixate on that, and it's like, well, I guess the adventure's about that this time.
Yes, exactly. We had somebody who was running a game for us a few years ago in the Warhammer RPG scenario, and he did exactly that, gave us a little offhanded description, and then gave us this big description over here, and of course we chose the little thing. So he kept throwing things at us and throwing more things at us to get us to go back the other direction, and we just would not stop going that direction.
It's like, I get it, you want us to go after these bandits, but there's a mountain full of flying monkeys over there, and that's a lot more interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
And the GM's like, or the GM, or whoever is like, why did I mention the flying monkeys? Why did I do that? All right. So usually we have when I'm interviewing certain game masters and such, I tend to ask them, depending on which game they're currently into and such, I say, well, what's your favorite, well, so far, what's your favorite race and class combination in that game?
Oh my goodness. So
this is a tough question, especially for people who run the games.
Yeah, that is a very tough question. I have been running so much, I've gotten very little time to play. Recently, we've been recruiting new DMs, if you will, and so I've had a little chance to play a bit more. And I have to say that the character that I've created the most recently so far is really fun, and I want to see how he turns out. He is a halfling barbarian.
I like it already.
Yes, his strongest skill is dex, obviously, because he's a halfling.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't dress as a barbarian. He dresses more as... he kind of grew up in one of those mama runs the family, and the family business, you don't ask about the family business. You just do what mama tells you to do, and you take care of who mama tells you to take care of. And then you go on about your own business.
Wow. This is kind of like the Luke Cage series that's on Netflix now that I think about it. In a weird way.
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, I didn't spoil anything for you.
Okay.
And it's not like that's a concept that hasn't been used in other places, too.
Right, exactly.
But it's interesting getting a paladin, or no, barbarian. Oh, why did I think paladin? Oh, I know why, because I made it, because it reminded me of this gnomish paladin that I had made in someone else's game.
Right.
And I based it off of Sir Didymus from Labyrinth.
Oh, brilliant.
So, and he was just kind of oblivious to a lot, of, just like Sir Didymus, to a lot of stuff, and it was a fun character.
The sweet smell of roses.
Is, I don't smell nothing, and I have the keenest scent in all of the land. Ambrosius, what are you doing? Yeah, and he rode around on a little dog as well.
Oh, nice.
All right. Is there anything you think that now's my chance to really say this about? I guess it could be anything. Maybe D&D that you wanna say right now.
Yeah, I guess if I were to say anything about D&D, I would say 5th edition so far has been the best thing that has come out of Dungeons & Dragons in a long time. It's simplified a lot of the rules. It's pulled a lot of new players in and just been an awesome experience for a lot of people. And it's great to see so many people getting into the pen and paper type of role-playing games and realizing that they've got a story to tell, that they've got a story to be a part of, that they can get out there and have fun on these. Even though, you know, these modules are made a certain way, it never plays out the same way twice because you've got different participants and they've all got their own stories that they're building along the way. And it is just... really lent a great air to that. Our group has grown from one table 2 years ago to we run 7 to 8 tables every Wednesday night now.
Wow. That
just
is,
because so many people great. Are enjoying it.
That's great. So, aside from the Wednesday nights at Firefly Toys and Games, which about when do you normally start those games?
We start those at 7 o'clock on Wednesday nights.
Okay.
We're also trying to run on Saturdays, Mondays, pretty much any day.
Any day that you can?
Anybody will run. People will play.
Okay. Now, if somebody wanted to find out more information, maybe not about when you're running stuff, or perhaps if they wanted to find out more information about the D&D Adventurers League, put you on the spot.
Yeah, go ahead, put me on the spot. Let me see what I've got.
But what would be a good way or the best way to get that information?
Well, you know, they say that one of the best resources out there is Google now, right? So you can, obviously, if you just want to find out more about Adventures League in general, you can just put in D&D Adventurers League.
Adventurers
yes,
League.
It's E-R, it's R-E-R-S. At the end of that. It's not Adventures League, but Adventurers League.
I know it when it, I'm saying it, it comes roll, out as Adventures.
It does not roll off the tongue like. real well. but there's I believe it's dndadventurers.org, I believe is the site from okay. Baldwin Games. And we, of course, our local group, we call them Soda City Adventurers. And, woohoo! And we have a site called sodacityadventurers.org.
Okay.
We also have a Facebook group.
Okay.
So, and that is DNDAL Columbia.
DNDAL Columbia. Okay, that's...
Yeah, spelled out.
Yes, spell it out. Awesome. So, for anybody out there listening, yeah, check out D&D Adventurers League. Phil, it was great to have you on this. At any point, if you want to come back on or talk about anything, it sounds like there's a ton of stuff that we could probably talk about.
Absolutely,
game wise and stuff like that, which is great. I'll talk to anybody about any role playing games and stuff.
Thanks for having me on here. I really appreciate it, and I would love to come back.
Awesome. And I know you got to. In fact, I know you're getting ready to run a game. Probably as soon as I break this equipment.
Absolutely. They are waiting on me out there at the table now.
All right.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed the show. I want to give a thanks out to Elderwood Academy, to Dan and Quentin for sitting down and talking with me, and, of course, for Phil talking with me at Scorpion, our gamer camp, about D&D and a bunch of other stuff. You can check him out at Scarab, and we're going to have some Elderwood Academy stuff at Scarab that we might be able to share with you guys as well if you come. So with our last episode, I wanted to give a shout-out to all the folks who helped me make that one skit about the Demogorgon. If you haven't checked it out, you should go back and check it out right now. So I wanted to thank Calvin and his daughter Brooklyn Korn for helping me record some of that. My friend Van Porter, shout out to you. He played the voices of the original or old or OG Demogorgon. And of course, Tim for his awesome rendition of the brand new version of the Demogorgon. You guys are great. Hope to have you guys on again doing some stuff like this. Hey, tell us what you thought of all of these sketches and such. And if you want to hear more of this stuff or you hear more of the radio plays, let us know. You can email us at swarmcast@s-c-a-r-a-b.com. So, again, this was John. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll see you guys at Scarab. We're going to have some more episodes coming out before Scarab. Probably a few in December, if we're lucky. Keep your fingers crossed on that. And we're going to end the show this time with an I Fight Dragons song. So enjoy that. So until next time, keep your dice rolling. And if they're not coming up the numbers that you want, it's probably something wrong with you.
That's it. That's the end of this episode of the Scarab Swarmcast. If you liked this, or even if you didn't, feel free to send us an email at swarmcast@scarab.com. That's S-C-A-R-A-B. Lots of little dashes in there. Or you can leave us a message on Facebook. Yeah, Facebook. If you want us to read any of your comments on the show, let us know. Hey, subscribe to our show. Check out the show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Or you can grab that RSS feed from our website. You can get our website off of Facebook or off of Scarab's website. Ah, it's all a bunch of internet flibbity-jibbity. So, until next time, when you think of Scarab's Wormcast, think of this podcast. And when you think of Toast, think of me!
Music on the Scarab Swarmcast is by iFightDragons at iFightDragons.com, MC Lars at MCLars.com, and Midnight Syndicate at MidnightSyndicate.com.